I have found a new place to buy my audiobooks.
Was it down the market? Sorry, should I say down the market?
3 for a tenner in a plastic carrier bag. I've spoke quite a lot about audiobooks and using audiobook shelf and how happy it makes me to listen to my audiobooks off of my own server. But the thing is, you've got to get them there in the first place. And in the past, I bought my audiobooks from mainstream online outlets like Kobo and Audible. But the trouble with those is they sell DRM encumbered audiobooks. And to get them into audiobook shelf, you first have to DDRM them, which is an extra hassle and in some places legally dubious to do.
So I haven't got on board with the audio book stuff yet, but I did get a Kobo this summer to go reading on holiday. So I'm familiar with Kobo. Is their audio books are still DRM encumbered? Because I think their books are not.
Yes, the audio books. They may have some that aren't, now that I think about it, but generally speaking, they are.
Okay.
But yes, in both cases, there are tools, which I think we've mentioned on previous shows, for relieving that.
I would like to raise a glass to Libation, which is a snap that I maintain in the Snap Store that does exactly this. And I have no problem with using that application because it's really easy to download them from Audible by just pressing the button and it just goes whoop, and downloads them all and I'm happy. So, yeah, come and get me, coppers. Anyway, over to you, Mark.
So what I've found, and a big hat tip to Matthew in our Telegram channel at linuxmatters.sh/telegram, is a site called libro.fm or libro.fm, L-I-B-R-O. And this is another online audiobook store, much like Audible. And it has a similar selection. It has the mainstream audiobooks I'm listening to. It's not just a place for independent or self-publishers or stuff like that. It is, you know, bestsellers and so on and known series. But the difference is, well, two differences. The first one is they don't do DRM. Everything mm-hmm. is DRM free. And the second thing is they do profit sharing with local independent bookshops.
Interesting.
So when you sign up, you pick your local independent bookshop, and I picked Coles of Bicester, which is where I go whenever I want to buy a physical book, and they take the profit that they make from selling you audiobooks and they share it with them through partnership agreements.
That is amazing.
It is, isn't it? I thought that was very cool.
That is super cool. And have you ever been in the bookshop and said, hey, I paid for this bit of the store, give me a free book? I don't know. I guess that's not what you would say. But
I don't think that's how businesses work. I've never tried it. Okay. So it works in a similar way to, say, Audible. You can either buy stuff directly at full price or you can pay a monthly subscription, which is about the same price as Audible would be. And then you get a credit each month to pick any book. And when you do that, they go into your library on the site and you can... they have their own app, which you can play through, but you can also just go on and you say download, and you can either get a zip full of individual files or you get one big, I can't remember what it's called, M4B file, which is the same format that Libation gives you. You can stick that straight on audiobook shelf and it's just like that.
That's rather wonderful. And what sort of prices are the books?
I think it varies, but I think a full price book is about £16 and then a monthly subscription is about £8.
So which I think you pay comparable. A monthly subscription and then yes. you pay for the books on
no,
top of
you pay that. A monthly subscription and that gives you one credit per month to pick a book.
Much like Audible.
Exactly. I think you can do a two credit subscription and then you can buy additional books with a discount, I think.
This is an astonishing find, Mark, but also it tells me something, which is the publishers of these books don't care about DRM, right? Because if these are coming from actual publishers and they're comfortable with this, then this DRM requirement isn't being enforced by them.
Well, it's interesting because, I've heard Cory Doctorow talk about how it's difficult for him doing audiobooks because he won't have his stuff published with DRM. And that means he can't put his books in Audible or won't put his books in Audible.
Right.
And his publishers want him to put his books in Audible because it's where most people get their stuff from. So he is in Libro.fm, but so is everyone else who the publishers don't seem to care so much about there being DRM, they tend to get about it being inaudible.
Right.
So it's, yeah, it's Amazon's requirement, it seems. I mean, I'm sure there, if we went and did a side-by-side comparison, there would be some who are missing.
Yes.
But yeah, in terms of what I'm looking for, I'm still going through the new Discworld audiobooks, and they're there. And then I also went looking for the new Spinal Tap audiobook and the Tim Berners-Lee memoir, which he published recently, which I was going to get from Audible next, and they were all there. Wow. So I just went for those.
That's fantastic.
Yes. So very pleased with this. I'll stick a link in the show notes.
I have been up to no good and have sort of kind of made a Linux distro that is not a Linux distro.
What have we told you about making distros, Martin? Come on.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because you and our good friend Stuart Langridge have said nobody should be making new distributions, and I do subscribe to that school of thought, because as we've discussed privately, most distributions are some theming, some wallpapers, and a bit of configuration on top. And you really don't need to spaff out a 4 GB ISO image in order to distribute your configuration. So I have created something that is just the configuration bit that you add to an existing distribution.
So despite knowing that you shouldn't make another distribution, sorry, officer, I slipped and out came a Linux distribution, but only the configuration part of it, so you can't arrest me, right?
Yeah. So what I've done is I've taken Ubuntu, and specifically Ubuntu Server, and then I've blended that with Nix, and I have created this abomination called Naughty Linux, naughty with an O.
So from previous discussions we've had, I'm right in thinking that you can already run Nix on Ubuntu, right?
Yes.
That's not a new thing. That's not what you've done.
No. No, I will explain the new bit that I've done, or the new technology that exists that has facilitated this. But when Nix was first created, like 22 years ago, it was designed to run on any Linux operating system. And that has been true the whole time. In fact, it runs on all the Linux distros and Mac OS, and it behaves the same in all those environments. So this is just Nix, the package manager, the language, the configuration tool, but not Nix OS. And the other thing that I've done is I've kind of hidden away all of that Nix power by a very simple configuration, which is just a TOML file in order to drive how you want to experience this creation of mine.
So the magic is an Ubuntu install, some stuff that hides the real power of Nix packages that you keep telling me about over coffee every morning. And you hide that away because actually the Nix bit is quite hard and not quite as straightforward to pick up for your average normal, you know, Linux nerd like myself, right?
Right. You know, the Nix learning curve, the language, because if you want to use Nix and create configuration files, you have to sort of learn the language and the ecosystem, and that is quite a steep learning curve. And the way that this all came about was partly your fault, Alan. About a year ago, I started experimenting with a bunch of the contemporary Wayland compositors and all of the tools that exist in the Wayland ecosystem. And I'm not talking about GNOME Shell. I'm talking about things like Sway and Niri and Hyperland and Wayfire. There's a whole category of these exciting Wayland compositors and a whole bunch of tooling that sits around them to create menus and panels and lock screens and notification centers and all the rest of it. And I think, Alan, you were drooling a little bit over, you know, what I'd been creating.
So your office, for those who haven't seen, is like a goldfish bowl, and you sit in it with your screens facing outwards, and I would walk past it every day and see you swishing around like Tom Cruise in Minority Report, but Minority Report that was cat poochin colored. If you imagine that, that's what it is, right?
Yeah. So, you know, Alan was saying, you know, I want these things that you've made, but I don't want to install NixOS. So I sort of had that in the back of my mind as, how does one day Alan get to use this stuff? And the other reason why I created this is well, I came up with a good name. That's always the problem. When you think of a good project name, you have to follow through on it. So once I thought of the name, that was kind of it. And also Maru, who's one of the Ubuntu community managers, he's been asking me at the Ubuntu Summit for the last 3 or 4 years, could I do a Nix talk? So I owed him a Nix talk. And this year I talked about Naughty Linux at the Ubuntu Summit. And in the show notes, there will be links to those talks and the slide deck.
So you qualify to talk at an Ubuntu Summit via the back door by putting Nix on top of Ubuntu. So it qualifies. Let me in.
Yeah.
They did. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the talk before me was about running Doom on a satellite. So, you know, it was awful. I think it's fair
game. Anything goes.
The way that I've approached this is you install Ubuntu Server, which you can just follow the Cybiquity UI, and you encrypt your disks, and you choose the minimal option if you like, and you activate SSH, and you get a bare-bones Ubuntu Server. And then by the time this show goes out, there will be an easier way to install, but there's a mechanism by which you can then remotely bootstrap that install with Naughty Linux. And what that essentially does is installs Nix, and that's the immediate bit of superpower. And then it also immediately installs Nala, which I talked about a couple of episodes ago. And that was like the thing that I was using at the time to spruce up this experience of running Naughty Linux. So installs Nix and Nala, and then applies the configuration that I supply. And what I've done is try to sort of separate the two worlds with a sort of a system boundary. So we've got the Ubuntu boundary, which is basically everything that has to happen before the user logs in. So it's obviously the kernel, but then bringing up all of the devices and peripheral support and authentication mechanisms, it gets you to the display manager. And actually, that's a curious thing, because the display manager is actually from Nix, but it's running in the Ubuntu boundary.
It's a bit of a fuzzy border between Nix and Ubuntu.
Yes, I've blurred the lines in a couple of places, I grant you. But that's because, like, one of the overriding motivations for doing this is Nix packages. The ecosystem of Nix packages is absolutely massive. It dwarfs all of the other distributions. In fact, you could probably stack your 3 or 4 favorite distributions on top of one another, and it still wouldn't have, you know, anywhere near the software archive that's available with Nix packages. And the Nix packages archive is always fresh. So you've got this massive archive of stuff. Like, if I find an interesting project on GitHub and I go and search Nix packages, it's usually in there. It's quite astonishing. So what I was able to do was sort of bring these two worlds together. Use the familiar Ubuntu bit with sort of the stable and robust hardware support, and then add all of the freshness that comes from Nix packages on top, and keep those two worlds separate from one another.
At the end, you get to log in, to a graphical desktop and swish windows around and open terminals and open other applications, and it operates much like any other desktop, but Capuchin themed, and it's all Wayland, and it's pretty quick, and all the applications that you're running come from Nix packages. You don't to apt install a whole bunch of stuff, or sorry, Nala install a whole bunch of stuff, because it all comes from Nix, and your Martin's configuration makes that happen and makes it easier than me having to remember all the weird and wild Nix incantations, right?
Yes.
But if I was picking this up and I installed it and I get onto your desktop, is there something which sort of tells me what's there? Like, presumably it's got all of the keyboard shortcuts that you use and it's installed the things that you think should be there, but I might want to install more things.
Right.
Where do I go from there?
So I've decided that it's going to be sort of a mostly on Rails experience. So Alan has mentioned Capuchin a few times. It's Capuchin all the way down. So from the point you turn it on, from the bootloader through Plymouth, through the kernel VT colors, through all of the terminal applications and the desktop itself, it's all unified. You get to choose which variant of Capuchin you want and what your accent color is, and it will configure that all the way through for you. But that's your only option. But I think that's fine because it's the best option.
Any color, as long as it's Capuchin.
Well, the four different Capuchin themes with 14 different accent colors.
I have yet to figure out how to change the theme.
Even
within the Capuchin universe, I have not changed it. But
right, okay. But then, yes, when you get into the desktop, there's a lot of familiar stuff. So I've basically chosen what are all of the current sort of promoted desktop applications from the GNOME world for the basic desktop apps. So things mm-hmm. like the file manager, the documents viewer, the scanner, the printing tools, calculators, disk usage, and all of that stuff, right? It's all of the stuff that GNOME promote.
Right, okay.
And then I've added to the TOML configuration file a simple stanza, which is packages. And if you search Nix packages for the packages you want, you can just add the string of things that you want in addition, and it will then automatically add those to the configuration and what's called realize them, so bring them into existence in your configuration. So you can add extra stuff. But the terminal experience is basically everything I've been talking about on this podcast for the last 2.5 years. So if you've ever heard me talk about the A to Z of modern Unix, all of those tools are installed by default. But most importantly, they're all Capuchin themed. And they're also pre-configured with all of the best outcomes in like how you should use them. So, you know, Actuin has the up and down just uses your shell history, but Control R brings up Actuin, for example. You know, stuff we've talked about on the podcast. You know, Zoxide mm-hmm. is there by default and it replaces CD. Exa is there to replace LS. So all of these modern tools are the defaults and they're all tightly integrated. So you sort of get this full seamless experience of all of the latest stuff with all of the bling turned up to 11.
What's the future of this thing? Is it just an opportunity for you to give a talk at Ubuntu Summit, or are you going to continue maintaining it, or do you think you want to build a community around it? What are you going to do?
Yes, to all of those things. So I did have a requirement to build this in that I had a need for an Ubuntu-based system that was capable of running some compliance software in order to be enrolled into a secure environment. And actually, although I could have packaged that stuff for Nix, it was a bit of turbo lag, so it was way easier for me to make a whole like distribution configuration. So what this enables me to do is sort of have that Ubuntu base as sort of the escape hatch for when you need to do something where there's a compliance requirement that it has to be Ubuntu. So technically, it is Ubuntu. I don't hide the fact that it is Ubuntu.
And it's technically correct is the best correct and compliant as well, yes.
So, yeah, I can then run all of that compliance software and also things like Docker, right? So that would be in the Ubuntu system boundary, and Tailscale would be in the Ubuntu system boundary. So you'd install those things via apt. But then all of my configuration that makes me productive on the desktop and the terminal, that is all from Nix. And the advantage is that if you go poking around in this thing, I've left some other entry points where you can make your own customization. So if you do want to add your own bit of Nix and you learn a little bit, it starts to ease you in to the Nix world. And the way that I started with Nix was using Home Manager just to manage my dot files for my, you know, configuration for stuff. And that's essentially what Naughty Linux is doing. But, you know, your home file includes the whole desktop environment, right? It's like managing everything. The neat trick behind all of this and what made it possible is a package called, or rather, a module in the Nix ecosystem called Nix System Graphics. So what that makes it possible to do is all of these Nix packages, these graphical applications, are now fully GPU accelerated, which was a hard problem to solve in the past. So Nix System Graphics is the magic source that makes this work. And when I gave my talk at the Ubuntu Summit, I finished by running Steam from Nix packages on Ubuntu.
So if people want to try this out, where do they go and how do they do it?
NaughtyLinux.org is where you go. And there'll be a link in the show notes to the GitHub repo, and all of the instructions and what have you will be in there.
I did a podcast at work, and I had to do it remotely because the day we were recording was not a day I was in the office. And as such, I had to set up my environment with, you know, microphone and all the necessary bits and bobs, which is slightly different from the environment that I've used for this podcast, because they're using a different platform and so on, but also because it's a video podcast and I'm not used to doing video because nobody wants to see our faces, right? And so I had to set this all up at home. And one of the things that we wanted to do on this episode was demo a few things on the command line. I thought, well, I'd quite like to demo something that looks pretty. How about this naughty Linux that I've recently heard about? And so I installed Naughty Linux on a ThinkPad. In fact, I installed it on two ThinkPads. I installed it on one ThinkPad and then had to give that ThinkPad away. And so I gave that one away and then bought another one. And both of these ThinkPads came in at about £200, thereabouts. One of them was a bit less than that, 160, and the other one was about 210. So on average, about 200 quid. And they both had 32 gigs of RAM in them. One had an AMD CPU, one had an Intel CPU, but they both had gobs and gobs of RAM and lots of disk space. And they both came off eBay and they were fine.
So I record this podcast on a £170 ThinkPad because there is some weird USB hardware error on my main machine and it keeps knocking my microphone out when we record. But yeah, you can get really good spec'd like ThinkPads that are within a few years old for, you know, what is really good value, I think.
So you say a few years old. I mean, yeah, they are a few years old, but they're business laptops. The two that I got were the E495, which is the AMD one, and the L14, which is the Intel one. Now, I installed Naughty Linux because I wanted something pretty and I wanted to have all the Capuchin stuff. And I knew I could install all the stuff that I needed to demonstrate on the episode of the podcast, which actually came out today, the day that we're recording it. And I got it all set up and we did the podcast. And then afterwards, I was looking at my desk where there were three laptops set up for this streaming environment and a microphone and everything. And I thought, I could probably stream this stuff on my own environment on YouTube and Twitch and Owncast, because I used to do that. I used to do a little bit of streaming about a year ago, and I haven't done any since. And I thought, well, I've got it all set up now, so I might as well give it a go. So I dug out the configuration necessary to make this all work, which was basically I opened OBS and captured the screen from the ThinkPad. So I was doing hardware capture using a hardware capture device, HDMI capture device. And the nice thing about doing that is I get the full screen experience. It's not like a window. It's not a VM. It's the actual machine captured. And the machine that I'm doing the streaming from is a completely different piece of hardware. And so it's not bogged down by any weird stuff that I'm doing on the machine that I'm doing the demo of. So having two separate machines is really quite nice. And I also dug out the config for StreamSprout, which is the tool that you made, Martin, some time ago. And for those who don't remember, StreamSprout, which we probably talked about at some point, probably on Ubuntu podcast or maybe on
this
show.
It was this one.
Is a shell script wrapper around FFmpeg. And the goal is you send a stream from your OBS or whatever to StreamSprout. And StreamSprout is configured to send it to multiple other places. And this is useful for me because it means I'm only sending one data stream out of the house. And then it gets to the server in Germany or wherever that StreamSprout is running. And StreamSprout then multiplexes that with FFmpeg off to, in my case, YouTube, Twitch, and Owncast. Now, I had to update Owncast because I haven't used it for a year and it was outdated. So I updated that, which was trivially easily because it's just a single binary. It's just a Go binary. So I grabbed that, updated it, had a noodle around in the config and everything still worked and it was all still set up. And then I tried streaming and it just worked. And I was quite surprised and pleased. And A few people joined, a few friends from our little community joined and said hello and were, you know, encouraging me in various ways to fix various things and asking me what on earth is this strange pastel coloured Linux distro that I'm running. And I had to keep pointing out it's naughty Linux. And I had the tab open and I pointed at your talk that you gave at the Ubuntu Summit. So I did signpost where people could learn more about it for sure.
So I think you're running Wayfire, which is like a Wayland re-implementation of Compiz. So did you have wobbly windows turned on?
No. Well, no. Maybe. Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember because I maximize everything. I'm not
right.
I'm not doing a lot of tiling windows and stuff. I had one whole desktop for the browser and another whole desktop for the terminal, and I just switched between them, swipe between them, because I quite like that. It's a thing I like doing. I did try a short while with Hyperland, and I tried a short while with Wayfire. I tried them both, and I think it's fair to say that the Wayfire either implementation or configuration isn't up to the same standard as the Hyperland configuration, because there's things like nice colored borders around the terminal and there's some animations that are a bit different. And so,
yeah, I've not finished working on the Wayfire stuff yet.
Right. So that's fine. You know, it's a work in progress. I think it's labeled pre-alpha, which it is fine with. Yeah. I mean, I'm a pre-alpha kind of guy, you know, forget these alphas. Anyway, it all worked and I was quite pleased with that. And then I broke it and I managed to fix it during the stream, which was good. I just redeployed the whole thing from another machine again and everything was fine. So there were a few gotchas, but it's all fine. It's pre-alpha. I'm fine with that. It's not a problem. But the one thing that I was a bit twitchy about is there's an outstanding issue with StreamSprout, your shell script that wraps FFmpeg. And the outstanding issue is very clearly called out in the README. It's very obvious. It says the stream key bit doesn't work, isn't properly implemented or something like that, because when you send your data to StreamSprout, you send it with a stream key, which is usually a random, you know, UUID or a sequence of characters that both the client and the server know in order to protect you from people hijacking your stream with a, you know, just pointing at your RTMP server. But that's the bit that's not implemented, the bit that secures it from other people pointing at your RTMP server. Now, I know this is a problem because Owncast, if I leave it running, which I generally don't do, I usually kill the process. It's just a go binary, as we've said. I usually shut it down after a stream. I left it running one day, and when I went back and looked at the logs, there were loads of attempts to try and stream through it. So people are clearly looking for RTMP servers and then throwing streams. I don't know whether it's like dodgy videos or they're targeting my one specifically. I suspect what they're just doing is sending like dodgy videos promoting Bitcoin or whatever, scams or something. I don't really want to look and I don't really care. What I want to do is protect it. So my stream key that is on Owncast, that StreamSprout uses to talk to Owncast, is different from the stream key that it uses to talk to YouTube and to Twitch, and it's different from the one that my client talks to StreamSprout. So that's all okay, but it did make me a little bit worried about the StreamSprout side.
Well, good news. This weekend, I've been writing a new application, which I'll be talking about in a future podcast, and that's implemented in Go, and it uses some really low-level FFmpeg stuff. And what this has made me realize is that I could actually revisit StreamSprout, which, as you say, is just a shell script that wraps FFmpeg, the command line tool, and actually write something that's sort of dedicated to the purpose of multiplexing streams. And I can implement proper stream key support as opposed to what is advertised in FFmpeg as stream key support, which just does, it has not been implemented. So you supply a key and it ignores it.
Good news, Martin. I've already done it. Ported StreamSprout to Go.
Holy cow.
Yes. It doesn't fully work yet. There's a couple of little gotchas, but I had it streaming to YouTube, and there was a few gotchas with the library that I was using, but I managed to get it streaming to YouTube.
Well, that's the key thing, because there's another project I wanted to use and it worked with all the platforms except YouTube. And I was led to believe that doing the restreaming to YouTube was the hard problem. So if you've got that working, you should be golden. That's amazing.
Well, yeah, it is quite amazing, actually. I was quite pleased. And the stream key stuff works as well. So if you put the wrong key in, it refuses awesome. To accept the stream. And it also has the same kind of output as Stream Sprout, with loads of emojis all over the place and all that kind of stuff.
Totally.
I haven't tried streaming to Owncast yet. I've been doing one of the platforms at a time, and I got YouTube working. Mm-hmm. When I got YouTube working, I'm now working on Twitch. And with the library that I'm using, it's actually a known problem that Twitch doesn't work with this library. Oh. So I don't know whether it's going to need multiple different libraries,
different
one per platform for each of the backends, or whether it's possible that there's one that can be used for all three. We shall see. That will be a story for another time. But that's where I am at the moment. I'm in the middle.
I should be subscribing to your newsletter.
Nice. I will probably mention it in the newsletter, no doubt. Yes.
And if people do want to see you doing these streams, how do they find out and where can they go?
Well, you know, I have this website called popey.com, and I added a page. If you go to popey.com/live, there is a single page which has each of the videos embedded in it. So if I'm live, you'll just see them there. And there's also another one, popey.com/chat. So if you're already watching on another device, or you're watching, or maybe on your TV and you want to chat to the stream, you can go to popey.com/chat, and it shows you just the three chat windows for YouTube, Twitch, and Owncast. And you can type in the chat if you're signed into those platforms. You can type in the chat and chat without having to go and watch the stream on the one where the chat is happening. That's the idea anyway. I don't know how well that works, but it's something I'm working on. And yeah, if people want to see when I'm live, just go to popey.com/live and it'll all be revealed.